Thank you for joining us for another lesson from God's Word. The West Huntsville Church of Christ at Providence is located at 1519 Old Monrovia Road, Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Anytime you're in the Huntsville area, we hope you'll stop in and be part of our worship. Sunday morning worship is at 9 o'clock, with Bible class immediately following. Sunday evening worship is at 5. Midweek Bible study is held Wednesdays at 7.
A number of weeks ago, David asked me to teach the last couple of lessons because he was going to be out of town. And he did something that's always dangerous because he said, teach whatever you want. Then apparently the only message that got passed to Paul was, hey, I'll be done 2 weeks early and I'll be out of town. And so Cody taught last week. And I'm going to fill in this week because he's out of town. I know y'all would rather hear Cody, so I graciously deferred to let him teach last week. So I was thinking about, well, what should we do to wrap up? Because David did a great job, and I don't have any cool pictures from the Middle East because I've never been. So I don't have any cool stuff that I can show you, and I could regale you with stories of places I have been, but we're not here just to look at vacation photos for me. Although I kid you not, my family attended what I thought was going to be a worship service and was nothing like a worship service at a supposedly named body of the Lord's Church in California one time, and I kid you not, it was mostly vacation photos from the preacher. But what I thought we would do, because for those of you who don't know, and she's teaching a class, so I can say this and not get in trouble, I'm married to a cartographer. So everything in my house is you better know how to read a map, and you better know what an isthmus is, and not just physical geography, but, and so I thought we'd actually talk about place names, because it's a running gag. Lindsay, right now, her job for the last 15 years is she updates the charts for NavCan. That's the, like, FAA equivalent in Canada. And so every time they change a T-route or a new GPS beacon or take out a VOR or make changes on all the navigation charts that are used by pilots, somebody has to make those updates. And it just so happens my wife and a guy that sits at his house in Madison are the people who do that for the entire country of Canada. So it's a running gag if I send Lindsay a text at the end of the day and say, hey, what are we doing tonight? And she's like, well, I'm busy. I'm in Canada. It's because she's sitting at her computer and she's working because she usually works in the evenings. The other guy does the work during the day. She does QA and other stuff at night. So it just works out well and she works part-time and she's done it forever. But the running gag is I'm in Canada and she is forever sending me texts of some oddly named little city that she'd never noticed before that she's run across somewhere in Canada. Allendale is a big joke. Outside Red Deer, there's Allendale RV Park. Allendale has an aerodrome. I think Allendale is doing pretty good with the RV business because he has a helipad at the RV park. He also has one at his house, and he has one at the lake place, and they're all named Allendale something, right? So today, I wanted to take some time, since we've just done a lot of looking at physical places and stuff that David had of some of the geography of the Middle East, I want us to look specifically at the names. And the reason why is because America is a little bit unique compared to most places in the world. I realize we're about to have a 250th birthday, or at least anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. However, we're pretty young. We haven't been here that long compared to most places. And so there's a lot of places here that were named in that last 250 years. And they were named by people who, when they got here, intentionally used a bunch of names that we're used to seeing and that we can find in the Bible. So I want to spend some time talking about some of those names and a few of those places today. What's interesting is kind of how all of that happened. Like, what was the engine behind this? And a lot of it was actually quite intentional and was driven by those people who landed in Plymouth. Anybody remember who that was? We're going to go all the way back to junior high on this. The Puritans, right? The Puritans were a somewhat misguided, but I think we could definitely call them zealous people when it came to their Christianity. And they understood themselves, the way they viewed themselves, is that they were a covenant people recreating the Exodus narrative. Okay? They viewed New England as the new promised land. That's the reason they were willing to get on a boat and go to a place where there was nothing. And they carried this out in a lot of ways. So New England was the promised land. The Atlantic crossing for them was the Red Sea. They were escaping from the land they were being persecuted in to this new place where they were going. Apparently, I had actually never heard this until I was doing some research on this. Apparently, in some of the darker versions of their theology, they even went so far as to see the Native Americans as the Canaanites that needed to be driven from their promised land that they had been given by God. So as such, there are an awful lot of towns that were very intentionally named after biblical sites. And this was done quite intentionally, because they were trying to make a claim about who they were and what God was doing in the new world. So clearly we see this framework a lot in New England. As other groups spread through the Midwest and the South, this continues. It wasn't the Puritans at that point doing this, once you get 100 years removed, but you had lots of other groups that were very much doing the same thing, and many of them carrying similar ideas. So how do you end up getting a biblical place name? Well, I'm going to be honest. Best I can tell, it's not that they walked in necessarily. This happened on occasion, but they didn't necessarily walk in and say, we're going to name this town Corinth. That's the biggest example I could think of close, Corinth, Mississippi. Usually what would happen was there would be a church that would be planted there. There'd be a group of Christians of some variation that would start there. So all of a sudden that became the meeting place. Well, the meeting place became the place that was logical to build more stuff. The town would then grow around that, and eventually the town would take on the name of the congregation that was there. There's lots of place names where this is how things happen. You see this in naming conventions that are not biblical too. You'll start with maybe a prominent farmer or settler in an area, and as he builds his farm up, then it becomes the so-and-so's place, and then he builds a mill, and then you go there, and before long there's a town, and you end up with, it's not exactly how it happened here, but all of a sudden you have Huntsville, right? So this is a common pattern that happens all over the place. So the Puritans, as they were starting this, very much viewed Exodus 4:6 as applying to them in a new way. And I have also established my covenant with them, and I give them the land of Canaan, and the land of their pilgrimage, wherein they were strangers. Ironically, there are now more than 1,000 biblically named places in the United States. Every state has multiple examples. Towns, parks, rivers, county names. It's not just cities. Especially here in the South, we see them even more, because there are an awful lot of congregations, obviously, that would use biblical names as well, even if the town isn't named after it. So let's take some time and look at a handful of these. There's a lot of them. But I thought we'd pick out a few and look at them and look at what the name actually means and what's there. Because I think a lot of these, well, especially the majority of the people that live in towns with these names, probably don't even know exactly what they mean, much less the history of what happened there. So let's start with the first one, because I don't know why we would start anywhere else. Bethel. Now, I'm pretty sure everyone sitting here when I say Bethel thinks of the congregation down the road, right? But there are also plenty of towns that have actually been named Bethel. The Hebrew is really two words put together, Beth-El. Anybody know what Beth means in Hebrew? Whispering, muttering, rumors, but no, no house. No one willing to actually say it. Beth-El. So Beth-El, Beth is house. Anybody know what El is? God. So Bethel literally means house of God. All right, well, it makes sense why you would name places after it. So where did this name come from? Genesis 28. In 10 through 22, we read the story of Jacob's ladder. Jacob names the place where he was Bethel, after the vision of the angel and God's covenant renewal. He set up a stone pillar there, and he vowed a tithe. Sacred site is born, right there. We have this place, Bethel. We get to Genesis 35. God commands Jacob, return to Bethel. The covenant is reconfirmed, and a second pillar is set up. Okay, so this makes sense, right? This is an important place. This is an important event that happened. It makes perfect sense that you would name this House of God. Anyone know anything else that happened at Bethel? What happened at Bethel by the time we get to Jeroboam? Yep. In 1 Kings chapter 12, we read that Jeroboam set up a golden calf at Bethel. The house of God became the center of state-sponsored idolatry. In fact, the site was probably deliberately chosen because of its sanctity. Jeroboam was literally weaponizing the name. In Amos 4 and 5, the prophet sarcastically tells Israel to come to Bethel and transgress. He warns that Bethel will become Beth Aven, house of wickedness. Hosea 4:15 also uses this pretty deliberately. But it started with Genesis 28:17. And he was afraid and said, "How dreadful is this place? Is this none other but the house of God? This is the gate to heaven." So let's go ahead and pause this here because we're going to see this over and over. What should we make of the irony that we name places today, yet depending on which piece of their history you want to pick, it's either a great idea or you could argue it's a really bad idea? Should we still do it? I'm going to argue yes. And I'm going to argue it's the same reason why we shouldn't tear statues down just because we've changed our opinion of how we want to, even if briefly for a time, to interpret the events around it. Yeah, a little bit. Most of my questions are rhetorical, but if you have a comment, go for it. I mean, Bethel was named House of God. There's plenty of people today that would have, when Jeroboam had happened, would say, we need to change the name because it's not the house of God anymore. Sometimes I think you need to remember the full history of a place to appreciate how things can go wrong. Because Bethel started off great and then it went off the wheels. When you tear down the column that was built or the memorial that was put there to remember the good things that happened, then all you're left with is the bad. That happens with statues too, right? If you have a statue and all of a sudden it's there for a reason, that's a teaching point. There's a reason they took stones out of the Jordan. Sorry, not to get ahead of myself. We'll talk about Jordan in a little bit. There's a reason they took 12 stones out and they left them as a memorial on the bank of what had happened there, right? Sometimes memorials are because of great things that happened. Sometimes memorials are because of things we don't want to have happen again. Yeah. Winners usually get to name stuff. Often true, yes. It's completely true. And sometimes people get to change those names, but we have to remember the whole history. I would argue that something that's a teaching point there is the fact that a place called Bethel, if not guarded, can become the source of idolatry, can become that same point. All right, so let's look at the next one. There's some stuff here that I learned that I don't guess I'd ever paid enough attention to. Bethlehem. Bethlehem, Hebrew name, again, Beth, Lehem, house of, anybody know? Bread, or food. So the Messianic birthplace carries a grain metaphor right in the name of the town that he was born in. I'll be honest, that had always escaped me. Ruth 1:1, Elimelech leaves Bethlehem, the house of bread, during a famine. In Ruth 2, Ruth gleans in the fields outside Bethlehem. The bread city becomes the site of her providential provision. In 1 Samuel 16, Samuel anoints David at Bethlehem. The shepherd king would eventually come from the house of bread. In Micah 5:22, we have the great messianic prophecy that points straight to Bethlehem as his birthplace and ruler of Israel. And then you get all the way to Luke 2, and we find the fulfillment with Jesus, the bread of life. I don't know about you, but I only knew about 5% of that when I started putting this together. I just thought that was interesting, because they're everywhere. When I hear Bethlehem, I'm going to be honest, I don't know why my name goes straight to steel. My brain goes straight to steel. I think Bethlehem steel. I think Bethlehem, England, which is a big steel town. But there's a lot in that name. Micah 5:22. But thou, Bethlehem Ephrath, though thou be little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of thee shall come forth unto me that is to be the ruler of Israel, whose going forth have been told from old, from everlasting. So clearly, the more I looked at this, you could do an entire lesson just on the name Bethlehem and all of the bread metaphors surrounding that city. Next one I thought we'd look at is Salem. Now, I don't know about you, but when I hear the name Salem, I live in Limestone County. So I think of that little community out Highway 99, almost before you leave the county, out near West Limestone High School. Anyone know the root for Salem? See, we're okay in here because James isn't in here to just give us all the answers. But what's the root for Salem? Peace. It's from the word shalom, right? Completeness, peace, wholeness. Can you think of any other cities of which Salem is actually the root name? Jerusalem. Exactly. If you write it out in Hebrew, it's Yerushalem. Most people know Salem without that first part of it, or the larger name. So Salem means peace. In Genesis 14:18, we see Melchizedek. Now, don't expect me to have anything enlightening or brilliant to answer all of your questions around Melchizedek. But in Genesis, we see Melchizedek, who is listed, his title is given as King of Salem, the King of Peace. And he brings out bread and wine to Abraham. It's the first time King of Peace is discussed or seen. And trust me, there's lots of stuff that can go around that. But in Psalm 67, we see in Salem also is his tabernacle and his dwelling place in Zion. Salem is used as a poetic name for Jerusalem, which makes sense. In Hebrews 7, we read that Melchizedek's title, King of Salem, is interpreted King of Peace. And we see a connection here theologically between him and Christ. Could it have been Christ? Hebrews 7:2. To whom also Abraham gave a tenth, part of all. First being interpreted King of Righteousness, and after that also King of Salem, which is King of Peace. Now, I find it ironically that if you go to just Salem as the name, the most popular version of that, known the world over, we got to go back to where we started with Puritans, and you go back into the late 1600s, and Salem, at least for a good 18 months or so, was definitely less than peaceful, right? You've been there, right? I've never actually been to New England, I'll be honest. I flew into Lowell, Massachusetts and out once. That's the sum total of my extent north of D.C. I've never had the opportunity to visit. But Salem, Massachusetts was named for the Hebrew word for peace, and to be honest, is now globally synonymous with the events of 1892 and the witch trials and the outbreak of, I don't know how you could describe it really other than community violence that was kind of carried out there. There's lots of other Salems, though. Salems, I mentioned there's the one in Limestone County. There's others that have cropped up. Again, often starting with a congregation that then the community took on the name. Hebron. In Hebrew, the word spelled exactly the same we would in English, just put a C at the beginning. And it's from a root word that means to unite, to ally, or to associate. It's one of the oldest supposed continuously inhabited cities, and his name is suggestive of the covenant relationship. So Hebron, what happened in Hebron? Well, in Genesis 13, Abraham builds an altar at Hebron. This is the first major altar we really read about, built in Canaan. In Genesis 23, Abraham purchases a cave. Anybody remember the name of that cave? Yeah, Machpelah, near Hebron. Ended up being the place of Sarah's burial. It's the first land that we really read about in Canaan that was apparently came to be owned through a transaction or a purchase. We also read that it ends up being the burial place of Isaac, Rebekah, Leah, Jacob are all married at Machpelah. So it's the patriarchal burial grounds are there. In 2 Samuel 2, we read that David is actually crowned king of Judah at Hebron. And he ruled there for about six and a half years before capturing Jerusalem. We read a little later in 2 Samuel that Absalom launched his coup from Hebron, which was likely trying to exploit the city's royal associations of having been where his own father had been crowned. So let's look at a couple of names that the meaning sometimes surprises people a little bit. Probably not this audience, but probably not as well known to inhabitants or people who drive by it or who see these names, especially in the American countryside. The first one I want to look at is Shiloh. Now, admittedly, the actual definition here is a little bit contested, but it's generally assumed to mean tranquil, or peaceful one, place of rest, or a messianic title meaning to whom it belongs. This last version of it has been used as a messianic proof text going back as far as Genesis 49. So what happened at Shiloh? Well, Joshua 18, we read that the tabernacle was set up at Shiloh after the conquest. Becomes the central sanctuary of Israel for approximately 300 years. In 1 Samuel, first three books, we read that Shiloh is where Hannah prayed for a son. It's where Eli served as high priest. It's where Samuel first heard the voice of God. We get to the fourth chapter of 1 Samuel, we read that the Philistines captured the ark at Shiloh, that it was devastated. This is confirmed in Psalm 78. Jeremiah 7 confirmed that the sanctuary's destruction. We also read that the destruction of Shiloh is used as a warning to Jerusalem that God will do to the temple what he did to Shiloh. Genesis 49:10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet until Shiloh come, and until him shall the gathering of his people be. So Shiloh is actually another one of those biblical names that's kind of ingrained in the American psyche. And for us, it's not that far away, right? I mean, it's just to the northwest of here a bit, up in Tennessee, we think of Shiloh, right? Now it's a park. It was the site of one of the bloodiest battles in the Civil War. April 6th and 7th, 32,000 casualties in 2 days happened at Shiloh, a place named Tranquil or Peaceful One. So another name that had a meaning, I don't know, Glenn, maybe this is my fault, but this is another one of the ones that I've used the word probably my whole life, and I don't know why I had never really understood what it meant. What does Jordan mean? Oh, I can't be the only one. Some of y'all know what Jordan means. What does Jordan mean? Okay, well, now I'm glad I put the lesson together. It's Hebrew. Yarden, from Yarad. It means to go down or to descend. This was brand new to me. I didn't know that. And if you think about it, the Jordan River is really named the Descending River. Why? Think about where it lies. Empties into the Dead Sea, the lowest point on earth. Where does it start? Up in the mountains. Anybody know which mountain? Hermon. It starts with springs at the base of Mount Hermon and flows from about 1,500 feet above sea level and descends to 1,300 feet below sea level. So we have the Jordan River, the descending river. The descending river is the dividing line of the covenant and the promise. On one side, it's still in the future. Once you cross the river, now you're there and it's being given to you. Once you cross the descending river, the same descending river that the Son of God that descended from a throne on high to earth descended into the waters and was baptized in. Where when he was then baptized, he saw the Spirit descend. I'm telling you, this is everywhere. It keeps going. The more you dig into this. This is another one of those that I'm like, this could be an entire lesson in and of itself. But it starts with a place name that I'd always overlooked and didn't understand that Jordan means descending. And again, the key events, I already covered them. Israel crosses the Jordan, echoing the Red Sea. Naaman descended into the river, and then Jesus was baptized in the river. There's a lot of richness here, but it's all there in that place name that I'd always missed. There's a reason people name these things. You keep seeing these connections. All right. So the next one. Antioch. Anyone know what Antioch means in Hebrew? I'll be really impressed because it's not a Hebrew name. Antioch is actually Greek. It's Antiochia, or however you say that in Greek. It was founded by Seleucus I of Nicator, who named it after his father, Antiochus. It's not a Hebrew name at all. It's a Hellenistic dynastic name. Transplanted from the transplanted to the Syrian coast. So it's actually a city that was founded by Greeks on the coast of Syria, yet it came to be one of the most theologically significant cities in the New Testament. And it's also one of the most common church-planted town names across the American South, by the way. And you'll see why when we start to discuss for a minute things you already know, but I'm going to remind you about that happened in Antioch. Acts 11. Believers are scattered by persecution following Stephen's death. They reach Antioch. For the first time, the gospel is preached in significant numbers to Greeks. And the disciples were first called Christian at Antioch. In Acts 13, we read, the first missionary journey is launched by Paul and Barnabas. They're sent out, and they leave from Antioch, not Jerusalem. It becomes the base of their mission. This is probably the reason why it is so often chosen as a name for folks who are planting congregations, simply because of this association with missionary work that we see in Antioch. Also in Galatians 2, we read that it was in Antioch where Paul confronted Peter over the table fellowship with the Gentiles. Acts 11:26, "And when he had found him, he brought him unto Antioch, and it came to pass that a whole year they assembled themselves with the church and taught much people, and the disciples were called Christians first in Antioch." So this is another good example of, it's my understanding that even Antioch, Tennessee, y'all know where that is? It's basically a suburb now of outside Nashville. Even Antioch, Tennessee got that name because there was a church that was planted there, the community grew, came to be known to that, then the whole town or region came to be known as Antioch. So this is one that we see quite a bit. And it's not even Hebrew. All right, the last one I had with much detail. Actually, I have a couple left. Zion. Anybody offhand know what Zion means? It's Hebrew for T-S-I-Y-Y-O-N. We pronounce it Zion, or Tsion. Its etymology is disputed. It most likely means dry or parched place, and is related to a root meaning fortress or citadel. So there seems to be a gap between the physical, literal name. What has Zion come to mean? City of David? Yeah. Zion has come to mean City of David. So the actual, the theological interpretation of the name has come to differ from where the word probably started quite a bit. Which is interesting, because that means when it was used to name just about everything, from national parks to congregations in the United States, they were leaning much more on the theological and the biblical meaning there behind that. In 2 Samuel, David captures a Jebusite stronghold, which is called the Stronghold of Zion. It becomes the City of David. It's mentioned in numerous psalms. It's mentioned in Isaiah 2, "For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem." Zion becomes very much tied directly together here. Hebrews 12:22. "But ye are come out of Mount Zion, and unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, and to the innumerable companies of angels." So basically, this word has made quite a transition from dry place to heavenly city, or city of David, because it's also used a lot to describe a heavenly Zion, or something other than just the earthly city. So the last one I was going to spend much time on is an interesting one, in my opinion. Goshen. There are 26 cities in the United States named Goshen. So there is, the name Goshen, I'm told, does not appear in the Hebrew dictionary. And doesn't have a clear history. And it is likely an Egyptian word, which makes sense if you think about it. And it probably, most people think it probably meant cultivated land or approaching. Apparently the scholars disagree, and I'm not one of them, so I can't argue with them, Peggy. What is unambiguous is that what it meant. So this is the region of Egypt, right, where Israel lived during its sojourn before the Exodus. We read about it in Genesis 45. Joseph arranges for his family to settle in Goshen, the best of Egypt's land. They are granted this region specifically because the Egyptians considered shepherds an abomination, and Goshen was viewed as a buffer zone. We read a little later in Genesis 47 that Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt in the country of Goshen, and they had possession therein and grew and multiplied exceedingly. Israel's population explosion begins in Goshen. And by the time we get to Exodus 8, during the plagues, Goshen is specifically excluded from the flies and the hail, and God draws a boundary around his people in the midst of his judgment. So probably the best known city that we would cross today, there's some smaller towns, but probably the largest one would be Goshen, Indiana. It is the largest American city bearing the name. It's in the heart of Amish and Mennonite farm country, so the name choice is not necessarily surprising. And it is, in fact, shockingly excellent agricultural land that's fertile, flat, and prosperous for many of the same reasons. It's probably pretty certain that the Puritans and others who would name their farming communities Goshen almost certainly meant to invoke the idea of God's provision. Now, what would be interesting is whether or not they realized, was Goshen meant to be the habitation point? I mean, that it was a place of rescue, but it wasn't the point. It was a stopping point, right? It wasn't where they were going to stay. It wasn't where they were going to be built up as a nation forever. There was another land that they had been promised for that. So I could understand naming a farming community Goshen just because it's a great place to farm and stay, but it does have a little bit of a intermediate mindset to it, which I guess would still apply if you consider that all of us are only here for a short period of time anyway, and that it's a stopping off point as we travel, as opposed to a final destination. Because the idea of Goshen is not one that it was going to be a permanent habitation. Okay, so what does all this mean? I just think it's interesting that the names on our maps are not always neutral. And I also think, much like statues and monuments and other things, they can be great teaching points of what actually happened there. I know that when Ian was little, to this day, he's still enamored with history. And so I remember when he was 12 or 13, my parents set off one weekend on a Saturday and they took him up to Shiloh, to the battlefield, to see what had happened there. What I'm pretty sure didn't happen in that discussion was, on that trip, was a discussion of where the name Shiloh comes from, or what it actually meant. That may have been on a marker somewhere on a place trying to point out the irony of the name versus the events that had happened there. But there are lots of events that happen around us that if we know a little bit more of the history, it kind of changes the context around it a little bit. Because things aren't static. It's easy to forget that what we've seen in the last 20 years is not all that's been there. It's amazing how quickly we forget what has happened in the past. I recently got asked to help with a rezoning cause down the road from me. Apparently some folks in the neighborhood next to me are all upset because they're going to rezone a corner, or there's a petition to rezone a corner to a business use. Now, if you look at this corner, Bill, ain't nobody putting a house on this corner. It's an incredibly busy corner between two major roads running through Athens, and the argument has been, well, it's always had a house on it. Therefore, it has to always be a house. My argument is, well, you don't know the history of that house, because that house was first deeded from the federal government in 1848. Glenn stood in that house, and it was a drover's inn. That's a business. The rest of the time, it was used as a farm. And if you don't think a farm's a business, you're probably not a very good farmer, right? So sometimes we have to go back and look at the names, and even then, they can change, and they can put a new light on it, even if it's ironic that a place called Peace or Tranquil becomes the site of a horrific battle. So, in summary, I have some great news for you. I'm done. You get 5 minutes back. I appreciate your attention. Hopefully you pulled something out of this, and there are at least a couple of these names that you may not have known the whole history of as deeply, or can make a connection to some of the other imagery that's actually used. I know for me the most enlightening one was just Jordan, and then once you start digging through it, and then Bethlehem, and all the ties to bread, and all the references that goes through it. So hopefully the next time you open the Word of God and you're studying, maybe you'll see some extra connections there that you hadn't seen before that were being laid out for us to find, that we just have to take the time to study and observe. So thank you, and I appreciate it.
We hope you have enjoyed this lesson from God's Word. If you would like to continue your study of New Testament Christianity, please send your name and address to World Bible School, West Huntsville Church of Christ, 1519 Old Monrovia Road Northwest, Huntsville, Alabama, 35806. Or if you prefer, send your name and address by email to wbs@westhuntsville.org.